Disrespect will take you places you can't get to from here. Disrespect entertains with a look at the challenges and sometimes the successes of people with disabilities who have taken from them or are denied the full choice of possibilities to affect for the better their own lives or the lives of those above them. Disrespect put together our show for you on October the 15th this week. Even though we had a show already prepared, we got a call that the homeless issue in Cridge Park has been resolved by the BC Supreme Court in favor of homeless people having shelter in the parks. We were offered an interview today. We were unable to accept that offer because of production facility scheduling. Nevertheless, we'll have that interview for you next week. What we have for you this week are four excerpts recorded in City Hall by Ted from Victoria. And you can find these excerpts and others at radioforall.net under Paving Paradise. Now, we don't have proofreaders in community radio, so you have to spell paradise with a C. Paving Paradise at radioforall.net. We'll find those segments. If you just like to sit in your chair and take them as they come, here they are with Ted's blessing on Disrespect.
Hello, my name is, Kevin Seitzma, Ms. Mayor, Chairperson, and Council. On behalf of the Aria Strata, we strongly disagree with the current direction of the city and stand united with the Cridge Park Rescue Group to oppose the City of Victoria's proposal to develop Cridge Park, including the historic Pacific Lawn Bowling Green. Cridge Park is shared space. The Aria, one of the immediate neighbors of this space, wishes to formally ask that the city kindly reverse the path they are taking. The Aria believes it's unwise to destroy the existing historic significance of the site by replacing it with any building. The city's responsibility to both creating park space and preserving parks should remain a priority. Any development on designated green space surely flies in the face of the province's environmental green plan. This rapidly developing Humboldt Valley neighborhood needs to have a balance of green space and structures. The current proposal to develop Cridge Park upsets that balance, not to mention the proposal to greatly increase the density at the former site of the Crystal Court Motel. We, the Aria, hope to think that the city is not short-sighted by removing neighborhood parks before nearly 1,000 new residents form a vibrant Humboldt Valley community. We certainly understand the appeal of the proposed location. So did the well-meaning civic leaders at the turn of the 20th century. But along with the Cridge Park Rescue Group, we at the Aria believe that Cridge Park founders intended Cridge Park to be left the park for all to enjoy. We don't believe they intended to exempt buildings merely because they're popular with the public. Personally speaking, as a future member of the Downtown Residents Association and current resident of the Aria, our family of three bought into the property in part knowing that the Cridge Park was going to be beautified by the developer as a result of the city's fine leadership and planning. It was this park, including the Canadian Pacific Lawn Bowling Club, we were looking forward to play with our toddler son. It was so important to us that when we were profiled in the Aria's newsletter in fall 2007, it was noted. We have sadly learned that the agreement between Alpha Developments and the city has been significantly modified. It also needs to be noted that this modification was initiated by the City of Victoria. This modification threatens the park's existence and effectively has paved the way for future development. The promenade between St. Anne's Academy and the Inner Harbour is in jeopardy. What was the motivation of the city to modify such a solid, positive plan? Consider this. In delivering his annual address at the start of his third consecutive term in December 2005, His Worship, Mayor Alan Lowe, discussed his vision for Victoria, one that is based on proactive leadership in the following areas: enhancing Victoria's reputation as a safe, vibrant, and green city, and revitalizing the network of recreation, community, and neighborhood centers. What part of Victoria's budget is affected by the city's new desire to develop upon this park? Who in the City Council authorized such a bold move in a clandestine manner without considering public consultation? The Aria Strata strongly disagrees with the current direction of the city and opposes the City of Victoria's proposal to develop Cridge Park, including the historic Canadian Lawn, Pacific Lawn Bowling Green. At the end of the day, we, the Aria, hope to give a standing ovation on the city's leadership when they no longer enable development on parkland and or historically significant properties. If I could borrow a theme of a public credit card marketing campaign, admission to swim at the former Crystal Gardens saltwater pool, 2 cents. Admission to see the critters in the former Crystal Gardens, $10. Admission to future exposition at the Crystal Gardens Convention Center, approximately $20. Playing with your son and granddaughter in a park outside your home and meeting friends at the Canadian Pacific Lawn Bowling Green, priceless. There are some things money can't buy. Thank you very much for your time and allowing me to express the Aria Stratus concerns and going over time.
Okay, thank you.
Dear Acting Mayor and City Council, I'm Chris Constable. I'm here at City Hall for the third time this year to discuss the Canadian Pacific Lawn Bowling Club. It's my understanding that the renewal of the club's lease is currently being discussed, since a request was recently made by city staff to the club to provide updated information on utilization of the green space. Therefore, I wish to take time to dispel any inaccurate information. I cannot stress enough how much support there is in the community for the CP Lawn Bowling Club. We have met with a variety of residents' groups, neighborhood associations, and key players in the area, and have found they share our vision for keeping the lawn bowling green in Cridge Park as the key historical user. Unfortunately, it seems the only people we aren't getting support from is the current City Council and staff. We have an excellent track record with previous City Councils, including those that refer to us as the emerald in the crown of the city. It is only recently that our activities have been called into question. This was made clear to me earlier this year when I discovered that city staff was giving inaccurate information to the public about the club. I therefore filed my first Freedom of Information request for any correspondence the city received and replied to this year regarding the club. The results were very interesting and troubling. I was happy to see that all the documents the city received were in support of the club remaining as it is. However, the city's replies contained false information. Information that I had already clarified to the mayor, the city manager, and other city staff in a meeting months earlier. Anyone who wrote an email or letter to the city regarding the Lawn Bowling Club this year has been sent a template response. I will quote a few passages. The city regards the Lawn Bowling Club as an important public space within our downtown core. Fewer than 40 regular club members for just a few hours a day for just a few months of the year. As I mentioned, I told city officials on January 28th that this information was no longer correct. While membership in 2000 had dropped to about 40 members because of the ongoing construction in the area, by the start of 2008, that number had already doubled. I made this clear in the meeting, so why was this number still being used in city communications months later? Two other passages within the city reply also concerned me. The city has been working closely with representatives of the Lawn Bowling Club to ensure remaining club members are fully assisted in their transition to other clubs in the region. And decisions regarding the future of this site will be publicly debated and will be fully transparent. I wish I could say these statements were true, but I cannot. The city has not been working closely with the club, not to discuss our current lease, the use of the facilities, or the possible transition to another area. We've been asking for consultations and meetings for months, but have yet to receive them. Moreover, we've been recently told that all discussions regarding the lease of the land will be held in camera. All in all, we feel like we're being targeted and left out of the process, and we're not sure why. The only argument we've heard from City Hall in favor of developing the land is a lack of utilization and membership. Yet, as I clearly stated on June 26 when I addressed Council, our membership has nearly tripled this year alone. If the argument is all about utilization, we'd like to know what the City considers acceptable use of a green space before it sells the land for development. This should be discussed in context to all other playing fields and recreational facilities situated in City Parks. How much is enough, and why are we the only ones targeted? In our report presented in June, we highlighted the restrictions on the current lease that are holding us back from maximizing our utilization. If there are other arguments in utilization, we'd love opportunity to discuss them. We're not sure why the city is so intent on destroying the remaining green space in our downtown core. We understand the city has a no-net loss policy for its parks, yet Ellis Park has not yet been replaced. Can we ask that a replacement for Ellis Park first be provided, then a feasibility study for the replacement of a green such as ours be made, before we move forward funding consultants in support of greedy growth? We are committed as a club to maintaining the Lawn Bowling Green and neighboring Cridge Park as a vibrant outdoor space for everyone to enjoy. Next year, the 2009 National Lawn Bowling Championships are slated to be held in Victoria, and the following year, the Olympics are in Vancouver. How do we want Victoria to look on the national and international stage in terms of recreation and sport? I would hope we'd be seen as an active participant and supporter of these types of activities. We produced a report designed to address the very concerns the mayor and senior staff have raised, but have not received any feedback since June. Has Council had a chance to review it? Thanks for listening. I'll now answer any questions.
Councilor Chandler.
I don't necessarily have a question, but I will tell you that I read your document cover to cover, and I appreciate the effort that you've put into articulating your vision for the property, and I appreciate you coming out and continuing to articulate it to us.
I want to thank the council for the opportunity to speak to you. I wrote some stuff, and I think I'm going to skip a lot of it, but it's strange to stand here and talk at a meeting, you know, where we haven't recognized the lost and stolen lands of the Coast Salish people. Today, I was reminded about Captain Cook's little journey here into the Inner Harbor, and what the ship's doctor wrote about the diseases that were brought by the people on board the ship. And there was also some a great concern for the children that are being born of this arrangement. And I just heard about this thing just the other day too, and it really, you know, strikes me as odd that you'd be looking at removing again one more green space. Did we just lose Ellis? And didn't you guys hear from people saying something that if you take parkland out, put some parkland back in, you know? I'm not a lawn bowler. I play bocce ball. And there's a beautiful park right across the street from where I live here in Victoria, and it's very lumpy. And so, you know, you're basically lobbing the bocce ball rather than bowling it. And I thought maybe as I grew older and my hair grew whiter, maybe my clothes would grow a little bit whiter and I'd be able to actually join one of the lawn bowling teams here in town. But if there's disappearing greens, I don't know. Maybe this is an unrealistic vision for me and for my future. What I'd like to address, though, is the actual Cridge Park and the Tent City lawsuit. Anybody here recall David Johnson, David Arthur Johnson, and some of the other campers, the people whose goods and belongings were ungraciously tossed into a dumpster and destroyed? They haven't recovered a lot of that. There's some other trauma thing. Do you people recall about that? Because I thought, when I heard about this thing, I thought that it was a strange kind of a deja vu happening, that maybe this really explains the City of Victoria's attitude and positions that it took in that lawsuit. maybe you just misguided children and accidentally a charter challenge sprung from your actions. Or maybe you guys are better protesters than people like myself or the people that I associate with, and that this you saw as a way to make a charter challenge happen. And that's why you insisted on this lawsuit against David Arthur Johnson. I'm really, you know, questioning motives here more than anything else. The plan I looked at, 16 stories are going right on top of the actual trees where, you know, the tent city protesters tied their canvases to and tried to establish at least somewhere where some people, you know, can live, you know, the mayor's task force. Didn't we identify 1,550 people that are challenged right now for housing? You know, and so what are we doing? You know, what are we doing here? If I could ask the council a question, out of the 16 stories that are going up there, you know, what portion is there for people like David Johnson, who doesn't have money, doesn't use money, probably will never ever get any money in his entire life? How much room is for him? You know, people like him, people that don't have basic rent or don't, you know, is there an answer to that question? No, you know, I'm on the HAT committee too as well, and I noticed that, you know, 103 housing units being added to you know, house some of the people that we see sleeping around in the streets are 103 units out of 1,500. That's not very good. That's not progress. It's embarrassing. I really miss the fact that those trees are going to go down. So, you know, what are you going to do with the trees? You're going to just pick them up, move them to somewhere else? How long have they been growing for? You know, and at one point, does somebody come along and say, oh, that tree's only been growing for 50 years. It's hardly worth keeping around anymore, or is the architecture here in Victoria so good that maybe, you know, you're going to have this great big building sort of over top of the trees and not on the trees? You know, there are some spectacular, you know, designs looking to buy in other countries like that. You know, in Japan they have like a building with a hole in the middle of it. You know, so I am dumbfounded. You know, what is behind this block? Because it doesn't seem like there is a replacement for the trees. There's no replacement for the green spaces. There's no address for the homeless people, the people that don't have money or anything like that. So,
Sir, your time is up.
Okay, you know, let's enter into some talks, you know, and let's start doing something. I know that I came to this council and offered you guys to look at a DVD of the tent cities. It is built in the Dignity Village model in Portland and that. And you know, I found out that somebody has already done this 2 weeks before I even did this. You know, so it's twice that you guys seen about the Dignity Village. And each and every time I get it, like, you know, well, that's very nice. Thanks for speaking.
Thank you very much.
Anybody want to ask me any questions?
Thank you, Your Worship, Mayor and members of City Council. I'm Stuart Stark, and tonight I'm representing the Cridge Park Rescue Group, over 25 community groups who have got together in the last 2 weeks, ranging from neighborhood groups to a credit union, from strata councils to sports groups. 10 years ago, when St. Anne's Academy had been rescued and restored, politicians of every stripe and from every level of government who had participated in that great project commented on how amazing it was that in this day and age, any city in North America was able to add 6 acres of parkland to their downtown area, as Victoria had been able to do. Development on the grounds of St. Anne's Academy was not deemed to be desirable, and development was therefore transferred to Wylot, where the Marriott Belvedere and Astoria now stand, in order to save this important green space. Much was made at the time of the connection and creation of a necklace of parks, stretching from Dallas Road through Beacon Hill Park and the St. Anne's grounds, through Cridge Park and Thunderbird Park, and through the grounds of the Royal BC Museum and the Empress to the Welcome to Victoria sign on the Inner Harbour. Cridge Park has been a park on the city's books since 1929. It has served a function well. The Lawn Bowling Club has maintained the green at their own expense for the last 78 years, and the park has provided an important and appropriate setting for the two significant heritage buildings that flank the park, the 1875 National Historic Site of the Church of Our Lord and the 1925 Crystal Garden of both national and provincial importance. So why are we here this evening? Why are these groups here questioning the status of Cridge Park? It's because City Council has been promoting the development of Cridge Park behind closed doors. On January 28th, a number of the Canadian Pacific Lawn Bowling Club Planning Committee members met with the Mayor, City Manager Penny Ballantyne, and members of the city's parks and recreation staff to get clarification of the rumors that their lease might be in jeopardy. The Mayor indicated nothing had been decided, but other options for use of the property were being considered. Just over 2 weeks later, on February 14th, City Council met in a closed meeting and were presented with this document, the Crystal Block Planning Options. The 40-page document prepared by the Planning Department is full of carefully drawn-up plans showing various density proposals for Cridge Park, ranging from simply adding a truck lane across the Lawn Bowling Green to 7, 9, 11, and 13-story residential and commercial towers. 3 weeks later, on March 6th, now in an open meeting, Council's Committee of the Whole again looked at the document, which is when average citizens first became aware of it. Committee of the Whole gave the Crystal Block Planning Options Report support in principle at that meeting. But that same day, March 6th, the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria wrote a letter to the Mayor and Committee of the Whole expressing our, quote, expressing our deepest appreciation for this recent decision that you have made concerning the Crystal Gardens block after searching for a downtown location for many years. This is great news. So what discussions had taken place before the public became aware of development proposals for Cridge Park? The wording of that report is very strange. At no point in the report is Cridge Park referred to, but simply as a green, somehow sounding underutilized and empty, possibly ripe for redevelopment. Moreover, in that report is this quote, and listen carefully to this gem. Quote, with nearby St. Anne's, Thunderbird Park, and Beacon Hill Park, this area of Victoria is served with several open spaces. As a general principle, removed public greens may be replaced in areas short of such spaces. So does that mean that City Council's own policy of no net loss for removed parks recently applied for Ellis Park would not apply here because there are several open spaces in the area? So does that mean that if you are in a neighborhood blessed with parks, that council can take it away and not replace it? That is what that clause says. So the great legacy of the necklace of parks finally linked by the grounds of St. Anne's 10 years ago is suddenly of no account, something citizens worked for 20 years to preserve, and great efforts were made with development transfer agreements to Y-Lot to preserve that open space. What is going on? City Council has professed in letters to supporters of the Lawn Bowling Club that this process would be transparent and open. It is not, and it has not been. Who authorized the Planning Department to look at developing city parks for any purpose? City Council is still continuing on this path and considering development on the park. They've engaged Colliers Vancouver office to look at commercial development options that Cridge Park presents. I have four questions. The Cridge Park Rescue Group requests that City Council immediately abandon all plans for development for Cridge Park. We further request that the terms of reference for the Colliers consultant looking at development options for the Crystal Block be altered to eliminate Cridge Park from any deliberations and focus on the Apex site at Douglas and Humboldt Street instead. We further request that City Council renew the lease of the Lawn Bowling Club for a long term to allow them to continue to build their membership as they have been successfully doing and to continue to provide a downtown exercise facility in Cridge Park and to beautify their grounds. And our last request, we request that the City once again treasure Cridge Park as citizens expect them to and replant the plantings on both Park and Boulevard that the City has removed over the last several years, and once again treasure Cridge Park for the important public part that it is in the City of Victoria, providing the vital link in our necklace of parks. Thank you very much.
Mr. Stark, if you wanted to hand those questions to Mr. Schaefer, then I noticed he was trying to jot them down.
I will forward this to you, if I may. Thank you.
Making up for our no music jam-packed show recently, Mead Lux Lewis, Honky Tonk Train Blues. Now that the election's done, we have some news we've collected for you over the last 3 weeks. First up from the Star, RCMP didn't do homework on taser use report charges by Tonda McCharles, the Ottawa Bureau. The RCMP did not do due diligence when it approved the taser stun gun for use as a less than lethal weapon by its officers, a hard-hitting independent review concludes. The report was ordered by RCMP Commissioner Bill Elliott after the uproar following the death last October of a Polish immigrant shot with a taser by RCMP at the Vancouver airport. Submitted in June to Bill Elliott but not made public, the review says the RCMP relied too much on the advice of the Taser's American manufacturer in developing its policies and training, did not consult widely enough with medical and mental health experts about its impact on people, and did not treat the weapon as a prohibited firearm, its proper legal classification. The report was obtained by the Toronto Star under access to information and slams the use of the term excited delirium by police officers to describe combative, resistant suspects, saying it is an excuse to justify firing the 50,000-volt charge. You want to know more about that one? It's all over the news. We'll be glad to delve into it with the people who took part. From Wednesday, October 15th, questions still unanswered. Year after tasered man died, Petty Fong, the Western Canada bureau chief of the Toronto Star. 1 year later, questions remain about the circumstances surrounding Polish immigrant Robert Zakanski's death after he was shot with a taser gun. Crown Counsel had said a decision would be made by the second week of October about whether there will be criminal charges against the four RCMP officers present at the incident in the Vancouver airport, but that deadline is set to lapse this week, with no word from Criminal Justice Branch on charges or if more time is needed to consider the evidence of an RCMP investigation. Zakanski, 40, died on October 14, 2007, after he was tasered by RCMP officers responding to a call at the Vancouver airport. The public inquiry is one of nearly a dozen probes called following Zakanski's death. Zakanski, who had just taken his first ever flight, was left wandering for hours at the airport when his mother could not find him. Zakanski had left Poland to start a new life in Canada. His death angered thousands of people around the world who saw it on a video shot by a bystander who witnessed the event. A memorial service will be held this weekend in Kamloops, where Zakanski's mother, Zofia Sizowski, lives. Again, the Star, strep outbreak likely to spread. This is a Canadian Press article. Ontario health officials say deadly infection that has killed up to 10 in the north targets the marginalized. "We've seen it in Western Canada. We're seeing it move east," said Dr. Don Lowe, chief microbiologist at Toronto's Mount Sinai Hospital, and he said he wouldn't be surprised if the infection migrated by the end of October or November. The province's chief medical officer of health said the outbreak shouldn't alarm the general public because it's largely confined to the homeless and other marginalized groups. "For the province at wide, I would say no. It's not a big concern," Dr. David Williams said yesterday. NDP leader Howard Hampton called the provincial government negligent for not informing the public. Hampton has called for a view of whether the health ministry met its obligations regarding the outbreak under the Health Protection and Promotion Act. "And let's hope we never have an outbreak which only affects provincial medical officers of health." That wouldn't be important, would it? From the Globe, patients infected by strep feel betrayed by silence over outbreak. This is by Kate Hammer in Thunder Bay. "The eye of the strep storm has sat over the city's south core, where drug users take shelter from the cold in abandoned buildings. In those crowded dens on Simpson Street, where bathrooms, needles, and pipes are shared, invasive Group A strep can spread like wildfire, and the Thunder Bay District Health Unit has defended its silence about the outbreak by saying the risk of infection was concentrated there, not among the general population." Lee Ciswerda, Thunder Bay District Health Unit's epidemiologist, has said about 38% of those infected were intravenous drug users and 15% were underhoused. But according to Elizabeth Alvarez, who was the health unit's associate medical officer of health until June, when her contract wasn't renewed, "the decision not to go public was initially based on the widespread group of people who'd become infected, which included children and the elderly. She said there were concerns that an announcement would create larger crowds in the city's only emergency room, which has the largest volume of patients in Ontario." And there's a picture here of Annette Swerdlich showing the scars of a strep infection. which can turn into flesh-eating disease. She became sick after grazing her knee in May. The bacteria was moving through Thunder Bay area at the time, but the city's public health unit only publicized the outbreak in October. Here's one that goes back to September. Poverty slips on McGuinty's agenda. No news to you, I'm sure. The issue was to become high priority this year, but as the economy slumps, the premier lowers his sights. Carrie Gillespie, the Queen's Park Bureau of the Toronto Star. Coming up with a comprehensive plan to reduce poverty was supposed to be a top priority on the government's to-do list for the remainder of the year, but with the downturn in the economy, Premier Dalton McGuinty has signaled he may not be doing as much as originally planned. Oh my gosh. This is his line on poverty reduction from last week. Given the state of the economy, it may very well mean that we won't be able to move as quickly as we would have liked or as we had originally intended. In government, we have to act responsibly in the same way that our families do. If finances get tight in our homes, families make adjustments and they focus on their priorities, McGuinty told reporters at a Liberal retreat in Goderich in mid-September. But McGuinty promised during the last election that poverty reduction would be a key priority of his government, and he can't abandon that now, advocates argue. Besides, helping the poor is good for everyone in bad times, said Jennifer Laidley of the Income Security Advocacy Center and a member of the 25 and 5 Network for Poverty Reduction, a coalition of more than 100 individuals and groups calling on the government to cut poverty by 25% in 5 years and at least 50% in 10 years. Poor people don't sock away money in bank accounts in Geneva and invest in stock markets that crash. Poor people spend their money at the grocery store, Laidley said. Investing in poverty reduction is good economic policy. Now, for all these stories, if you want to hear more about them, you know what to do. Email me, dialogue@inbox.com. Okay? And we'd like to know what you want to hear about, and we'd like to follow up those stories. But we can't read your mind, especially over the internet. At least that technology isn't perfected yet. This one's as far back as it goes. Editorial accuses Ottawa on outbreak Wednesday, September 17th, Toronto Star. As the death toll rose from the national listeriosis outbreak, an editorial in the Canadian Medical Association Journal slammed the Harper government for undermining public health safeguards. As in the Walkerton and SARS epidemics, an outbreak of this size may point to systemic failures across multiple levels, states the editorial in the journal, referring to the deadly water contamination 8 years ago in Walkerton, Ontario. Listeria is the biological agent, cold cuts the vector, but the ultimate cause may be found in risky government decisions. Well, you've re-elected them, so perhaps you should question those decisions before they take care of you too. Screening for Down syndrome open to all. The issue of Down syndrome has vaulted into the headlines with the announcement of Sarah Palin as the U.S. Republican vice presidential candidate. The 44-year-old mother of five has a five-month-old baby, Trig, with Down syndrome. Canadian Society of Obstetricians and Gynecologists guidelines now also stress the importance of doctors providing expectant mothers with impartial information. Statistics show 80 to 95% of those pregnancies are terminated, says Krista Flint, executive director of the Canadian Down Syndrome Society. While believing families armed with proper information make the best decisions for themselves, Flint says too often medical specialists present only a doom and gloom scenario. There are currently 35,000 people with Down syndrome in Canada with a wide range of capabilities, says Flint. Many of them will go to university, marry, have a driver's license, she points out. With Down syndrome occurring in one of every 800 births, it's unknown if the numbers will drop with the extension of testing. However, Flint adds, it is a possibility. Early screening can prevent invasive tests that can only be done later in the pregnancy, such as amniocentesis, she says. Advances in technology, such as ultrasounds and science, have led the way to widespread introduction of early screening. Meanwhile, in the U.S., an early test called SEQURE-DX, SecureDX, that definitely diagnoses chromosomal abnormalities is in the works and may be on the market by next year. Doctor's obligation in birth case defined. The Star, Tracy Tyler, legal affairs reporter. A doctor's professional obligations do not extend to unconceived children of female patients, the Ontario Court of Appeal has ruled in a case involving a girl left with birth defects from an acne drug taken by her mother. Requiring physicians to look out for the welfare of yet-to-be-conceived children would force them into an impossible conflict between acting in the best interests of a woman they're treating and the welfare of her future child, the court said in a unanimous decision yesterday. And I believe that is the day before yesterday. This is dated Wednesday the 15th. The court was ruling in the case of Jane Paxton, 5, who was born severely disabled after her mother Dawn began taking Accutane, a drug known to cause catastrophic injuries to a fetus. Shafiq Ramji, the Newmarket doctor who prescribed the medication in 2002, believed there was no chance Dawn Paxton would become pregnant because her husband had undergone a vasectomy more than 4 years earlier. It will likely be a benefit to physicians to know that the interests of the women they treat are the physician's only legal concern, said Sarit Bettner, Dr. Ramji's lawyer. Since the court didn't study the issue of whether James' disabilities were caused by medical malpractice, the decision means that even if negligent in prescribing such a drug to mothers of childbearing years, a doctor owes no duty of care to the future children who may be harmed by that act of negligence, said Susan Chapman, a lawyer representing the Paxtons. And the final and overarching issue of our time, this one from The Spectator, subtitle Canadian Press, Ontario Works Cuts, called, quote, blatant attack. People are trying to raise their grandchildren with limited financial means, are being advised by the province to go on welfare rather than receive a few hundred dollars from a government program each month to help cover their expenses. In what critics call a blatant attack on vulnerable families, the province is changing the rules governing who qualifies for the Ontario Works Temporary Care Assistance Program. That means living arrangements that show any sign of permanence, such as grandparents taking their grandchildren to sporting events, will disqualify people from financial assistance. It's like any other parents. If they are in need, there are other benefits, Community Services Minister Madeleine Meyer said. Let them eat cake, and we know what happened to her. If you want to hear any of these stories, dialogue at inbox.com, D-I-A-L-O-G at inbox.com. That's 12 minutes of news clips for you this week. Okay? Email us and let us know if you want to hear about these stories on Disrespect. Because of technical problems, we weren't on the air last week. This is Cotter's interview. Till next week, Cotter Ballooney in sanctuary, awaiting approval of his immigration status in Montreal.
Yeah. How many workers work with you in the office?
Well, let's see. We have a volunteer coordinator. We have an administrative coordinator. So one of them does people. One of them does things. And then we have some part-time people. We have news, spoken word, which is different from news because news is specifically news shows. Spoken word is any show that is speech. Then we have music, which is a busy and important department. We have sports, someone who oversees the live broadcast of sports events. And then we have that's okay. That'll sound good on the broadcast. Then we have committees. We have a programming committee and a number of other, a fundraising committee of which I'm a part every year. And I think there are other committees too, but because they're kind of, they act for the members and for the board. And we have a board to which people are sometimes appointed. I think there's some students on the board and there's the station management.
Okay.
And then there's a couple of people who are elected from time to time.
Good.
So, yeah, most everybody, I mean, except for the 5 part-time positions, the spoken word and the sports and those people, and the volunteer coordinator and the administrative coordinator, everybody else works for free.
Okay.
Yeah. So you have to like what you're doing, which helps.
Mm-hmm.
I say you have to like what you're doing if you're doing it for nothing. And that helps, that everybody likes what
they're
doing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So we couldn't get in touch with Diane Finley, and I don't think we'll be in touch with Mr. Harper coming to Hamilton, unfortunately. But looks like things are kind of rough for Mr. Harper right now.
Yeah, but, you know, he lost a few points, but I'm sure he's going to win.
I'm sure. You're sure of a majority or a minority?
No.
Oh, okay.
No,
so no. You're sure of a minority, at least.
Yeah. But, like, for sure. Because, like, the liberal is not better than the same.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
You know, it's like, yeah, I don't think so. It's like the liberal, the conservative, the same. That's same politics.
That's a very Canadian point of view, Carter.
Yeah.
I think many Canadians would probably agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Same politics. Yeah.
And I'm working 12 hours during the election in one of the polls. Excuse me, it makes me tired just to think about it. I'll be working 12. I'll be on October 14th, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, and I'll be in bed October 15th.
Understood you?
Yeah, I'll be in bed October 15th.
Okay.
I can't normally do 12 hours, but one day, yes.
Yeah.
Just like I work overnight here, and then I go to bed for like a day and a half. Sometimes the show needs to be done, you know. We have an unusual interview this week. I had an auto worker who was laid off, and then his friend, probably in the same line of work, hung himself. Another friend of his started drinking and lost control of his diabetes, so he had his legs amputated. And this guy took to drinking drugs.
Wow.
And lost his marriage, and he's now severely disabled and on drugs all the time. He looks kind of sleepy. I wanted him on the show, but he forgot yesterday that he had said he would come on the show, and when I spoke to him, he didn't even remember saying it. So,
do you know Jeff, when I got my deportation?
No.
I was drinking.
Alcohol. Oh, okay.
7 days a week, whole, like, yeah, I was like big drunker, the alcohol.
Oh, okay.
I came almost alcoholic person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah, and I was like every day, every night, 7 days a week when I got my deportation. And
yeah. This was as a result.
I was like depressed. And
yeah.
Yeah. When I came to church.
Yeah.
I continue to drink, but like year, but now like 14 months, 15 months, no more attached to my mouth.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Did you know that there is Alcoholics Anonymous on the web?
Yeah, I know. It came at the church here.
Yeah? But it's on the internet. They have meetings on the internet.
Yeah?
Yeah.
No, but I saw them like every Friday, every Saturday and Monday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, here in the church.
They still come?
Church. Yeah, two days a week.
Very good.
But I never go with them because I'm not.
You can't leave, no.
No, but I can't. But like I'm independent. You know what I mean? I don't want to. But I had the responsible to whole Montreal for Alcoholic Anonymous on my radio show one time.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
Yeah. But, like, now, my position, I took position for myself, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, no more drink, that's it, no more.
Oh, yeah, when you're alone, it could be really rough.
Yeah.
Especially for a diabetic.
Oh, I was like, I don't care.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
I was like, I feel like I want suicide. That's what I feel before. I feel like I have to die. Why? You know, I was like, why I want to go there in Algeria? That's it. I feel like...
Yeah.
Yeah, and I started drink like crazy. And
yeah.
Actually, before I came to church,
Yeah?
When I came to the church, like the blessing. It's a blessing for me.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
I'm glad. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say to that, except I'm very happy for you.
Yeah, just like now, like for 14 months or 15 months, I didn't touch alcohol. I hate alcohol now. Like,
do you have the date? Do you know the date that you stopped?
27 July 27.
We should start a clock for that too, shouldn't we?
Yeah, it's like. Yeah,
we have a clock for pain, and we'll have a clock for success. We'll run them side by side and see which runs longer.
Yeah, July 27.
2007?
2007, yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah, but year before, like, before 27, just I touched only two times, like, a whole year after.
Oh, before.
Before July.
Yeah.
I touched July, it's like June to July, I touched it only 2 times.
Yeah.
After, I never touched it after 2017 now. Like more than 14 months, I didn't touch it.
Well, you know what they say, one day at a time, eh?
One day at a time, yeah.
Yeah. But that's good, 14 months, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but like I'm happy with that.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
And believe me, Jeff, I can't smell the alcohol. If I smell alcohol, I feel very nervous.
Yeah.
And I won't show up. And
oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope. I hope you have some good mocktails when they celebrate your acceptance.
Oh yeah, one day, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Mocktail is a cocktail with no alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had many parties here, but without alcohol. Only like, you know.
Yeah.
Only okay. The juice, and it's like nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Any projects on the go?
No.
Okay.
No, we'll stay quiet because Thanksgiving, maybe we had a big supper here in the church. With
friends. Somebody bring you turkey?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
That's what you said, like.
It's not going to make me any slimmer, Cutter.
Well, it's good. It's good.
Yes, for sure.
It's good.
You know, turkey contains tryptophan, which is an amino acid that makes you sleepy?
Yeah?
Yeah, that's why you're always sleepy after a big turkey dinner. That's true. Yeah.
You know, Jeff, the first, when I went to United States,
yeah.
Algeria to United States, and JFK?
Yeah.
The person I meet to take me to shelter.
Yeah.
The office. When
yeah.
Before I went to shelter.
Yeah.
The guy, he gave me turkey sandwich and Coca-Cola. Like, good welcome to...
Was it Thanksgiving or something?
No.
Oh, okay.
I remember...
Just turkey sandwich.
October 27th.
Oh, close for the Americans. 2 weeks away, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. And he gave me, like, turkey sandwich and Coca-Cola. And, yeah, like, welcome to New York.
Yeah. Okay, welcome to New York.
Yeah, it's like 100% North America.
Yeah, that's
Coca-Cola
true.
Coca-Cola and turkey.
Turkey sandwich, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the turkey puts you to sleep and the Coca-Cola keeps you awake. Well, I can't.
Yeah.
I can't say that I've ever been further than the Caribbean out of North America, but the Caribbean now has come here. In the neighborhood I live in, you can get Caribbean breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Ackee and saltfish.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have not tried any yet. Maybe I'll even like it. Ackee is like scrambled eggs. It's a vegetable, but it's like scrambled eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very mild tasting, and it looks yellow, and it looks sort of fluffy.
Yeah.
So you're taking it easy, waiting to get better. The doctor's been, yes?
I hope tomorrow to Wednesday, I hope the doctor won't stop by.
Okay, good.
All right. Yeah, because I have my wisdom tooth also.
Yeah, is it hurting?
I feel it, yeah.
Oh.
But it's not like a big pain, but I feel it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But the doctor said, like always said before, when you feel it, just call me.
Okay.
Yeah. He said he couldn't, like, now it's like 8 months.
Yeah.
1 year. Yeah, 8 months. He gave me this antibiotic because the surgery, he have to do surgery to take it out.
Yeah.
Because
okay.
It's still in.
So he does the antibiotic so that it's not infected when he takes it out.
Yeah, but he said he can't do it here.
Okay.
He said you have to, take me to his office, and he opened, like he went to surgery. That's what he said.
Yeah. Well, if he has to take you to your office, to his office, maybe like that other lady, maybe we can get you some kids for the occasion, eh? Cutter, don't go away. Daddy, we love you. Yeah.
Because I have two lawyers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but this is my lawyer, not a woman. She had, because like the both, it's like, the both my lawyer, it's like, the woman and the guy, it's like the, it's like, how can I say, it's cook, boyfriend and girlfriend.
Yeah, okay. So the two lawyers are a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had the baby yesterday, the first baby.
Oh, congratulations to them.
Thank you.
And, what is boy or girl?
Boy.
All right, yeah.
His name Mish.
Mish?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Oh, yeah. Congratulations. You got a team.
She called me and she left me a message. She told me, yeah.
Okay, good. All right. Yeah. Any word about your second application? No way. It just goes through the process.
Just waiting to process.
Okay.
But I know maybe after 14, because everything now it's slow. That's
yeah.
why I know.
All right.
Yeah.
After the 14th. Everything's after the 14th.
Yeah, that's what we hope.
Everything except the stock market crash, right? That comes before. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, Jeff.
Nice to talk to you. Glad
nice
to hear you're a little
you
bit
too.
Little bit better.
Yeah,
and,
take care.
Yeah, we'll talk to you next week.
Care. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Cater Balloony. He's been awaiting approval of his second application for immigrant status in Canada for 1,000 days. And now to take us out, Big Joe Duskin, Boogie Woogie Prayer.
I'm going to change my two or three different basses in here, and I'm going to mix them all in, and I'll let you guess who's who. I won't call them out to you. Here it is. It was three artists that done this, Mead, Luck Lewis, Pete Johnson, and Abbott Ammons. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can now listen to the show wherever you're near an internet download. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Disrespect is streamed live from CFMU 93.3 at http://cfmu.mcmaster.ca. Tune in at showtime to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.